On this episode of the podcast, we discuss Mordecai.
Oh, I saw posters for that movie.
Yeah, Johnny Depp's in it, and he has a mustache, and he's in the movie on the poster, and it's called Mordecai, and Johnny Depp is in it with a mustache on the poster. The movie's called Mordecai.
Oh, that
Who's
sounds
in
great.
It? Mr. John Depp. And what's he wearing? Mustache on the face. Name of the movie? Mordecai. I haven't seen it.
Welcome to the Flop House. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey guys, I'm Stuart.
Can opening sound. I'm Elliot Kalin. I stepped on your last name, Stuart, which is Wellington.
It's okay.
I wish you guys at home could see the way that Stuart
and girls.
The pregnant pause as Stuart waited for his chance to say his name so he could open his Modella.
Modella is
Nelson Modello.
That's the female version of a Modello.
Nelson Modello. I don't know if to be offended by that or impressed.
An important beer. An important beer.
Dan is literally, he's two
over.
For two in misreading what it says on Stewart's beer can.
Two for two. Modelo is an important beer. Well, I should give it a good seat in my restaurant.
Dan,
from the kitchen.
You have a 100% perfect record in mispronouncing beer text. If this was an eye test at
hold on,
you would have failed.
Cerveza especial.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can do it better in Spanish.
I mean, your pronunciation.
He's got you.
Are you sure?
You
is Spanish your native language?
Either me. I don't know.
So no, is what
you
you're saying.
You get a lot of body acting there, people listening.
Dan, knowing it's an audio podcast that he's been doing for, 8 years now, decided to do an exaggerated shrug since we would hear the air currents passing over your shoulders.
Mm-hmm. I'm creating a theater of the mind.
Yep.
There's an audio space that is being heard and sensed.
Yeah,
and it's
rattle,
between your
sounds.
Ears.
Whoa.
Wait, we're in a haunted house of some kind?
Yeah, I'm just making a theater.
No theater is complete without a haunted house
a home
chain
theater
sound.
Of the mind.
So what do we do on this podcast?
Apparently we just say junk.
We watch a bad movie and then we talk about it.
How do we talk about it?
Derisively. With a lot of digressions. And some jokes.
Okay, that sounds pretty fun.
We probably summarize the movie.
Yeah, somebody
all right.
does.
Not always.
All right, I'll take one, please. I'll ride this podcast.
Okay, well, why don't you take a seat right there.
You got it, sitting down.
Okay, I'm you want to spread your napkin on your lap. You might get a little bit of splatter on you.
Okay, well, I don't know why just on my nap. On my lap. I'll just strap myself in right now and so I can get wet on this ride.
Yeah, your napkin's there.
Yeah, my napkin's on my lap.
Sir, you're being awfully aggressive about this napkin. Sir, please spread it on your lap.
I did. Sir. The napkin is on the lap.
All right, this is for your safety, sir. I don't care. I don't care if you die. This is just a job to me. This is for you. Sir.
Is this the ride? Do I just get abuse?
Yeah, this is the ride. It's for people who get off on abuse.
Okay, I'd like
That's
to get off this
for.
Ride, please. Unstrap me.
No. You signed up for the entire podcast. We'll unstrap you in about, how long is this podcast? Like 2 hours long?
Yeah, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're talking about
it's
a movie
the
we watched.
Danny Gould show.
So
it's a long podcast for podcast fans.
It's not a
the Day Ghoul show?
Yeah, the Dana Ghoul show.
Day Ghoul.
The Day Ghoul show.
It's a ghoul who just likes to get a suntan.
It's a daytime show for ghouls. It's like Ellen. The ghoul dances up the aisles, dances down the aisles, mm-hmm. interviews Kristen Bell or something. Anyway, so Dan.
Yeah, that's me.
What
Hold
movie,
on, I know that name.
What movie did we watch on this bad movie podcast?
We watched Mordecai. It's about Johnny Depp and his mustache.
Yeah, the movie's about Johnny Depp.
Yep.
It's about
a biopic.
Who plays Johnny Depp in this movie, Dan?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Wow.
I mean, I'd buy it.
Gender-blind casting. It's interesting.
Yeah. It's a switch 'em up. They both peed in a fountain.
They both peed in a fountain.
Yeah. It's like that.
Vice versa.
It's like that song. Two peas in a fountain.
No, that's about the game of Pinochle. Okay. When you're playing it over a fountain and the peas fall in.
Okay, I get
so,
it.
So Mordecai was is a comedy, right?
Yep.
Ostensibly.
I'm told.
Now, here's this seems to have been – so this was made, we should say, was directed by David Koepp. Is that how mm-hmm. it's pronounced? Who we all like, I think.
Off to a great start.
I like a lot of his stuff.
His previous movie was Premium Rush, right?
One of his previous movies. I don't know if it's his last director.
I feel like that was the last one
but I liked that a lot.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that. Mm-hmm. Michael Shannon is very funny in that movie.
Yep.
Yep.
A lot of
there's a lot
just
of
good
New York geography. New York geography is somewhat accurate.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing in a movie. You rarely see a movie that takes that much care in actually getting the geography of a city down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a pulse pound. Underrated. Pulse pounding through a ride for the senses that's as funny as it is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't know if it's heartbreaking,
so
but
that's,
yes.
So that's Premium Rush, but we're watching Mordecai. And yeah, so this is based
which
on.
Which is not a Premium Rush.
This is, seems to be based on some
it's
kind
a
of.
Great
there's plenty
rush.
Of Rush available. It's
this is the budget Rush. Not premium, yeah, readily available.
This is the sort of Rush that they give to students and prisoners.
Okay. So it's not the kind of Rush.
It's a
that
telling
was,
comment on the Rush distribution system in our country.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 something
it's
like that.
It's like Eric Schlosser's book, Rush Food Nation.
You're making this harder for us to do, Dan.
How am I doing that? I'm just doing the normal gibberish.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but it's somehow gibberier. So let's talk about what this movie's about. So it's based on some series of English comedy novels, mm-hmm. which seem to be themselves kind of like violent,
loosely
Jeeves and Wooster type things. So Johnny Depp plays an unscrupulous art dealer, Lord Charlie Mordecai, who has a curled up mustache that he just grew. There's only one.
That is a huge plot point.
Yeah, there's a couple flashbacks to his mustache list before, but everyone feels the need to comment on his mustache.
His mustache has a fucking arc in this movie.
Yeah, that's true.
It's really a central conflict of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mustache has a lot more character than many of the characters in the movie. But we're introduced to him in a kind of knockoff of the opening of Temple of Doom, mm-hmm. where he is trading a vase. He hopes for money to a Chinese art buyer.
You know.
Asian.
I mean, I think it's keeping in the sensitivity of Mordecai that we don't know exactly what ethnicity
well,
this
they're
character
in Hong
is.
Kong, so I'm guessing he's Chinese. But,
sure.
But things almost go bad. This is a guy he's swindled in the past, this Hong Kong gangster, and they're going to cut off Mordecai's finger, but luckily he's saved by his manservant, Jock, played by Paul mm-hmm. Bettany.
What's mm-hmm. what's the full name of this character?
Jock.
Wait, you know the full name?
Yeah, the full name of this character is get ready to hold your sides.
Okay, why? Is someone going to shoot me and punch me?
Holding on to your sides will prevent the bullet from entering your body.
Am I holding on to a side of beef because it might fall down and get dirty?
It is Jock Strap.
Oh, okay.
That's the character's name.
I don't think that's ever
Jock
said.
Strap.
I don't think it's ever said in the movie, though.
No.
You're nervous that if they said it in the movie, people would laugh so hard they'd die
they
of aneurysms.
They just explode. Yeah. Yeah, their brains would say, like, I got an email, and just explode.
Their
yeah.
socks would be knocked off with such force that they would propel themselves through the moviegoer in front of them.
Killing them. And meanwhile,
there'd be a big hole
sock
through their chest.
And the moviegoer had lost the sock would burst off. The force would leave their feet shredded in tatters.
Yeah.
Just mangled bones.
It's a double homicide from one joke.
They would slap their knees so hard as to literally knock the kneecap off of their leg, tearing the flesh, bleeding. And
the kneecap would go spinning into the air, and several people would misreport it as a UFO.
Yeah, mass hysteria would rock the nation, and the government would fall apart.
The tickling of the funny bone would occur at such force that the human body would vibrate to the point of blood leaking out of every pore.
To just liquefaction. Yeah. So that's what would happen if you knew his name was Jockstrap. But he is he's played by Paul Bettany, and he's kind of a combination bodyguard, manservant. He's
like
Kato,
like a Brock Samson.
Yeah, he's Brock Samson plus a little bit of Kato from the Pink Panther movies, plus Jeeves from Jeeves and Wooster. Like he's your kind of all service thing. And I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say right now, I really enjoyed this character a lot.
Yeah.
He is one of these characters who is always very subservient to his boss, even though he's clearly smarter than him and better than him at everything, but he's very protective of his boss. And they gave the one thing I don't like about him is they gave him the character trait of the ladies love him and he's always having sex with ladies. And it feels like it makes the character
jealous.
Well, certainly, of course, as any man who who is just catnip to ladies. Since I am, what's the opposite of catnip? What drives cats away?
Water, citrus. They don't like the smell of citrus.
I'm like a water bottle full of change being shaken.
Sure.
To cats, or like just being sprayed a water bottle being sprayed at a cat to ladies.
Fire. They don't like fire either.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like a flamethrower. But the
dogs.
I feel like it makes
some dogs. Depends.
Well, yeah, I've seen some unlikely animal friends on the internet that were pretty adorable.
I think it's funnier to me for a character to be super competent but not getting any respect.
That's true.
Than to see a character who's super competent, also a ladies' man, and yet for no reason chooses to stay with his stupid boss. You know, it's funnier to me if he's devoted to his boss and doesn't realize almost how much better he is.
But that's in the Jeeves and Wooster tradition, though. Like
was Jeeves constantly getting fucking ladies?
We don't know his success rate with ladies. That was
I'm gonna bet that PJ Woodhouse wrote them under his pseudonym Penis Giant Woodhouse with Wood spelled Wood.
It was a line of T-shirts, right?
No, where they were called? Yeah, it's called Jeeves and Wooster.
I'm just saying
where he was woosting all the ladies.
It's the same situation where a hyper competent character is serving a less than competent.
No, I like that, and I like that setup a lot. I just don't like the constant lady banging.
Yeah,
because it feels like the more this character is rewarded for his competency, the less funny it is to me.
Yeah,
the same way that like Jeeves and Wooster would stop being funny to me if like Jeeves became rich. Did that ever happen?
No, I mean that was a very, very specific.
Yeah, he won the lottery, or
like
something.
Like if Jeeves won the lottery, or like if it turns
like
out
in Roseanne,
or like in that final season of Roseanne when Jim Varney showed up as that English Duke.
Well, that was very. Yeah. Jeeves and Wooster is very specifically a play on like the class system, showing the supposed lower class being more competent than the upper class. I mean, here in Mordecai, it doesn't necessarily translate. It's
there's a little bit of that, but not quite as much.
It's just a couple of wacky guys being wacky together.
Anyway, they go back to London.
Like wacky guys do.
Yep.
They go back to London.
I would describe this movie as wacky. You're right.
It is wacky.
Madcap. It's a zany romp.
This is very much in the style of those 60s zany romps that they made.
Casino Royale.
Thousands
What's new Pussycat?
Of. Basically, like, almost every movie Peter Sellers made that when you watch it, you're like, oh, this isn't very good. Like, it's in the style of those movies. The
Alice Toklas, whatever that fucking
I love you, Alice B. Toklas. Yeah. Which is
the
not.
The Party.
Very, like, swinging 60s.
Swinging madcap mod 60s. 60s swinging so high and so low.
You're swinging all the way around the swing set.
Wow, that's pretty swinging. Yeah. So they try to emulate that. By
not having jokes.
I would say with having it's an over-the-top cartoonish style.
Having the
costumes
more interesting than anything said by any character.
Uh-huh. Yes. But I'm going to go on.
And having cameos by stars who would then exit the movie very quickly.
Huge stars of yesterday, like Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, huge stars of yesterday.
The most golden of all the blooms.
Yeah, the golden age of Hollywood and Jeff Goldblum. Former
Jeff
husband
Silverbloom,
of Marlena Dietrich.
You.
Jeff Silverbloom? I'm sorry, you have placed and you will receive the Jeff Bronzebloom. Why did I even enter the competition?
I don't know, but you can enjoy this performance of Jeff Goldblum playing jazz piano.
Which is something he does.
Yep.
With the hand of a fly. Now, let's talk a little bit about the plot, and then I'm going to tell you a shocking secret that I have about this movie.
Okay.
They extricate themselves from trouble. They go back to London.
Teaser.
Just do it.
Mordecai's wife Joanna, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, does not like his new mustache.
Mm-hmm.
And every time she tries to kiss him, she gags, which makes him gag. It is a gag that is not funny and makes the audience gag. They are deeply in debt because they're a bunch of drunk layabouts.
Mm-hmm.
Mordecai is kind of like an incompetent Nick Charles.
Yeah.
He's like a drunken party boy with a mustache who is not good at his job.
Yeah.
As opposed to Nick Charles, who gets better at solving crimes the more he drinks. And gets less funny the less he drinks in the later movies.
And she's a less ditzy Nora Charles who solves everything for her husband.
I don't think that's – oh, wait, no. In this movie, she solves everything. Oh, okay.
Yes.
I thought you said that they're saying in the Thin Man movies.
No, in the Thin Man movies, they're – fairly equal partners. Nick is probably more.
Nick is the one who solves the crimes. Yeah. There's always a part at the end where Nora is like, just explain to me who did it. And he's playing it out. But here's the story. Ewan McGregor, a government.
Ewan McGregor's in this?
Mm-hmm.
He is, which means.
Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Flophouse fame.
The man who originated the role of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
The man everyone thinks of and, when they hear the words Obi-Wan Kenobi.
And took over Alec Guinness's role in Trainspotting. Ewan McGregor. I found myself addicted to heroin. That's my kind of little puddly in Alec Guinness.
Yeah.
Luke. It's a suppository.
What?
Trainspotting. Anyway. Okay. It's called Jedi spotting. It's like train spotting, but they're all Jedis, but they're still strung out on heroin.
Okay.
Why do you think they turned to the dark side?
They didn't even do death sticks. You're just doing heroin?
They go straight to heroin.
Straight to heroin.
Yeah. Because the force is such a high, need a really hard drug to beat it.
You have so many midichlorians in your body, you need something really hard.
Oh, okay.
So you just even feel. Just even to get to zero.
Just to reach normal. Yeah. Just to get well. You're less than zero when you're a Jedi. Less than zero. So they're in debt. Ewan McGregor.
Zero the Hutt.
Zero the Hutt. That's the version of Star Wars where they digitally erase Jabba the Hutt. Yeah. It's just they're talking to an empty pedestal.
Yep. Salacious Crumb is sitting on thin air.
Yes.
There's just a hat for some reason. was the original Jabba wearing a hat?
It was the sequel.
I never noticed.
Sequel to the other famous George Lucas erasing film Zero the Greek, where they removed Anthony Quinn from all the scenes.
It's George Lucas's art project from his THX1138 days.
Well, he said, with the special editions, I added in a lot of nonsense shit in the backgrounds. I tried to remove something necessary to the scenes as a way of taking it in the opposite direction. You see, as an artist, I have to always be revolutionizing myself.
It's an experiment in pure film. All right, George. I guess you got all the money. Do whatever you want.
Why not? You're a billionaire.
Genius. Name Newt Gunray. That's a great name.
No, I took the original print of Casablanca, and I replaced Rick with Jar Jar.
I replaced Rick with a potted orchid, just to see if anyone would tell the difference.
It turns out they could. The orchid failed to have the charisma of Humphrey Bogart at his finest. Then I replaced Peter Lorre with kind of a small owl.
Now that was harder to harder for people to discern.
When the owl screeched, it sounded like Peter Lorre screeching. Now again, when I replaced Claude Rains,
the owl, the most Peter Lorre like of the birds of prey.
When I replaced Claude Rains with this collectible glass with a picture of Grimace from the McDonald's cast on it, again people noticed. It was very hard to believe that the Grimace glass was making women sleep with him in order to get out of to get out of Casablanca. But at the end, it was quite touching when the Grimace glass and the potted orchid walk through the fog talking about the friendship they're going to have. Because despite their differences, one of course being a flower and the other being a collectible glass, they can be friends.
You think you've really struck on something about George Lucas is his craziness is lovable. Even when he does things that are totally wrong, there's something appealing about him.
There's something kind of like puppy dogish about him and his flannel shirts and his high-pitched voice and his love of old hot rods.
Yep.
CGI haircut.
Yeah. Now, again, when I replaced Sidney Greenstreet with a Teddy Ruxpin, harder to tell the difference. Many people thought that I had actually improved the performance.
Who, George? Who?
Well,
who thought that?
The makers of Teddy Ruxpin. Mr. Theodore Ruxpin. Oh, wait, I forgot that in Flophouse lore.
What is Teddy Ruxpin's like son?
Well, much as Frankenstein's like monster is now known as Frankenstein, yeah. Teddy, he couldn't have a child, so created this monstrous robot bear. No, but I forgot that in Flophouse lore, Teddy Ruxpin is the son of Alan Ruck and a female bear. So go back to whatever episode that was in.
Labor Day.
That was in Labor Day?
I think so. The Alan Ruck stuff was in Labor Day.
Taught it to tell stories.
Now, he taught it. He gave it the magic power of being able to repeat the words on cassette tapes shoved into its butt. They called it Teddy Buttspin.
You're putting them in the wrong place.
The Teddy Ruxpin didn't seem to mind. Anyway, we're not really into the movie. Here, let's do the plot fast. There's a secret painting by previously unseen painting by Francisco Goya, the famous painter, which has been stolen in the murder
and,
of
a bean entrepreneur.
founder of the bean empire. Go, Goya, they used to shout at him, the bullies, as they taunted him. And he said, I'll show you. I'll make that a sign of pride.
Mm-hmm. You won't have to soak your chickpeas anymore, thanks to me.
I wish I was Jupiter and you were my children so I could devour... Oh, it's not Jupiter. It's Kronos, right? Who devoured his children?
Yes.
Yeah, I wish I was Kronos and you were my children so I could devour you.
Jupiter broke that cycle.
That's true. Jupiter was the one who killed Kronos. Because Kronos couldn't tell the difference between a god and a rock in swaddling clothes.
Exactly. He deserved it.
I don't know how Kronos managed to stay on top for so long.
Mm.
Now, there's this Goya painting. It was stolen in the murder of an art restorer. Ewan McGregor is with MI5, and he believes that an international terrorist named...
MI5! You're welcome, guys.
Thanks. Thanks. Reminding us of the worst catchphrase of, the first decade of the 20th century?
Yep.
Never has a movie gone from... I think this is the cutting edge of comedy, too. Please stop now. So fast in my mind as Borat did. I saw it when it opened, and I was like, that was great. And then I heard the catchphrase, I think, for three straight days, and I was like, this movie sucks. Forget it. Anyway, they think this terrorist has stolen it so that he can, I don't know, sell it or something. Mordecai agrees to get it in exchange for having, I guess, his debt to the country wiped out and 10% of the insurance money or something.
Something like that.
Anyway... Mordecai goes all over the place, gets into a lot of crazy shenanigans. There's a shootout at a car garage.
There were some jokes there.
There's a meeting between Gwyneth Paltrow and a guy named the Duke, who
played the bad guy in Last Crusade.
Which means...
Well, the main bad guy.
And, I mean, he's a Nazi, dude. How bad do they get?
He's a major bad guy.
Donovan is the lead bad guy in Last Crusade.
He's the guy who was in that that tank, and then there's that weird, like... push in on his face as he goes over the cliff in the tank.
If you go over a cliff in a tank, your face is going to be crazy.
Oh, sure.
You're going to get a case of what they call crazy face. He was also a Dick Tracy villain.
Gorin, was that his name?
I could have been.
Yeah, Hermann Göring was his name, and he was a much bigger guy than in the movie. Anyway, but he's also a returning flophouse actor, it turns out. And this movie,
like many of the actors in this movie.
This movie is full of returning flophouse faves. Johnny Depp. Paul Bettany, who's been in three or four Flophouse movies at this point, Gwyneth Paltrow, and of course Michael Byrne as the Duke, and
Jeff Goldblum.
And guess what Flophouse movie he was in? You'll never guess because I forgot we did it, and I forgot the movie existed. Blood, the Last Vampire. Now, was Jeff Goldblum in a previous Flophouse movie?
Dan,
not that I know of.
Okay, first timer.
Check the archives.
Him and Ewan McGregor, first timers.
Yeah, we a couple first timers. We'll be gentle with them.
Hmm.
And Olivia Munn, who's also a Flophouse first timer.
Okay.
Vogel was his name. Vogel.
Vogel, like a bird.
And he was very Vogel when he fell off that cliff going, Anyway, so the painting apparently has written on the back of it a bank account in which a Nazi bigwig, I forgot, it was Göring, I think,
I thought it was Goebbels.
It was Goebbels?
I don't remember.
It's one of the big name Nazis. One of your name brand Nazis. Not one of your brand X Vogel Nazis. One of your name brand marquee Nazis.
Yeah.
Like a Nazi that could open a picture.
Top Nazi.
Yeah.
Top Nazi. I remember when I was a college student, I was so poor, all I could afford was Top Nazi to eat. I mean, it's so cheap. You just add water and you heat it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Tasted terrible.
You use water? I just... poured the flavor packet inside, smashed it up, and ate it like that.
Nazi bits.
Again, one of the worst cereals of all time. You got little swastikas, little skulls,
yeah,
little mustaches.
No marshmallows at all.
No, because it was the city for work, not play. It was called, it said breakfast and mocked fry. Yeah. Anyway, let's stop with the Nazi joke, shall we? Mm. Mordecai is kidnapped by a bunch of Russians who want to find out where the painting is. Jock saves him.
We have that great open your balls joke.
Mordecai almost gets his testicles electrocuted, and the Russian thugs tell him to open his balls.
Open your balls,
and he doesn't
Quaid.
Know what it means. And there was a line that I thought was funny where they're escaping, and Mordecai says to Jock, open your balls. What does that mean? He's like, I don't know, sir. Really? What? I have no idea what you mean. I don't know, sir. Goes, do you really know and you just don't want to tell me? Yes, sir. Like, and here's my secret that I'm going to reveal. I think I kind of liked this movie. It was so dumb and not very funny. But when it was funny in a way that I was like, okay, I found that genuinely funny. And I was not as bored as I was watching 50 Shades of Grey, for instance.
Yeah.
Because at least it's a colorful looking movie. It usually moves fast.
And
but anyway,
it earns its hard R rating.
And, well, I mean, they say the F word a couple times. That's about it.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
You didn't even know.
Wowzers.
It's a soft R. Mm-hmm. Like the R is made out of butter left out on a counter for hours to keep it soft.
Like the French girls do.
So Hugh McGregor's character wants to win over Gwyneth Paltrow's character. He's always been in love with her. And in college, Mordecai stole her from him.
Yeah, there's that great flashback with Spin Doctor song. Yeah.
That was a good joke.
To place it in the 90s, two princesses just playing in the background. But
which in this movie feels like an anachronism because this movie exists out of time.
Yeah. Well, it exists nowadays, but everyone kind of acts like it's the 60s.
Yeah.
And this isn't one of those Austin Powers types movies.
You think
they weren't
like
Frozen.
Like a gold member is going to show up, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. A gold bloom shows up, though.
One of those gold members.
Speaking of which, they go to Los Angeles, sent by MI5, where they stay in a trendy hotel where everyone has mustaches in a scene that almost is a joke, but isn't a joke. They meet Jeff Goldblum, whose Rolls-Royce car has the painting inside it. And also Jeff Goldblum's, is it his wife or his daughter?
His daughter.
His daughter, played by Olivia Munn, who is a sex fiend. And
you know she's a sex fiend because she's named Georgina. If you're named Georgina in a movie, you're a sex fiend.
Really? What other movie Georginas are there?
Like
I think
real...
Head of the Family is the only other one I could think of.
The limited.
Because it's a very unsexy name, I'll give you that. It's not like...
Your sample size is very small.
Like
that's
Veronica
I haven't seen that many movies,
name.
Dude.
Yeah.
Well, like, what's another sexy name? Like...
Sapphire.
Sapphire. Yeah. Super classy.
Is she a jewel thief or is she a sex bot?
Or is she the jewel?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no reason she has to choose.
Sure,
this, I mean, like Georgina like, doesn't seem like a sex bot to me. Or Georgina like, seems like an awkward attempt to turn a man's name into a woman's
well,
name.
Well, that's what it was. Or like yep. Felicia the, is a sexy name for like yeah, a cat burglar.
It's the name George Lucas uses on
how
internet forums.
When it says age, sex, location. I'm Georgina, age 22, sex, female, location, Skywalker Ranch. When he's undercover,
everyone online's like, "Are you George Lucas?"
No, I'm Georgina Lucchesia. I'm a 22-year-old hottie.
My mistake.
My feathers are very wet for you right now.
I'm just wearing a plaid shirt
and nothing else.
And nothing else, except I could use computers to add more clothes later if that's what you're into.
Do you like hot rods?
Do you enjoy collecting Norman Rockwell paintings? It's a deep cut for George Lucas. Anyway, there's a whole lot of shenanigans. There's a big party at Jeff Goldblum's house. He and during it, Jock and
as always,
Jock, famous party animal, Jeff, party animal Goldblum. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think of something that rhymed with Jeff, and I couldn't think of anything.
Jeffrey G. Bloom.
Jeff Hef Goldblum. They call him that because he's like a Hugh Hefner times two.
Shaking my head.
Stuart did not like that.
Narrating that. Because they cannot see it at home.
While you're catching on.
Well, you realize that finally? How come you didn't know at the beginning of the episode? Mr. Like, Shrugs.
It's a learning curve.
Shrugs McKenzie over here.
Nancy and Shruggo over here. Shrugs Bunny.
Hey, I got one. Shrugs Meanie. How about that?
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay.
I'm not that into it.
So Jock and Mordecai are going to steal the painting during the party. Uh-oh, Gwyneth Paltrow shows up. She had a big argument with Mordecai earlier about his mustache. Shows up while he's being seduced through dance by Georgina. It's not what it looks like. He goes with – and he gets out of that situation pretty easily. Mm-hmm. He and Jock go to steal the painting, but it's already been stolen and Jeff Goldblum has been killed.
After two scenes.
He has about 2.5 scenes in the movie, one of which he is dead in. It is a waste.
Put him on the poster.
I got to say, and when compared to Jeff Goldblum death scenes, not as good as Grand Budapest Hotel or The Fly.
Mm-hmm. What about when he dies in Earth Girls Are Easy?
I don't think he does die in Earth Girls Are Easy.
I thought he got totally murdered by alien hunters.
I think you were thinking of Jurassic Park, the book, in which he dies, not the movie, in which he doesn't.
I didn't know Jeff Goldblum was in the book.
Yeah, yeah. He plays himself in the book. The thing is, the people they invite to the opening are the Sam Neill, the paleontologist, Alan Grant.
Okay.
Also, the mathematician, Ian whatever his name is.
Yep.
McDermott, let's say. And Ian Malcolm. And
Ian
Jeff,
McDermott.
And Jeff Goldblum, who is following Ian Malcolm around because he's going to play him in a movie called Jurassic Park about the successful opening of the Jurassic Park. The movie is going to be called Jurassic World.
How many raptors are in it, Elliot?
Like 40 billion, and they all look super fake.
Jurassic Girls Are Easy.
And it's about a guy who's having sex with a dinosaur.
Because they're so easy.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not actually that easy.
They're animals.
You have to
You got to drug them up.
Be very careful or you're going to be ripped apart because they're trying to have sex with them.
Because they're clever girls.
Yeah, there you go.
Get it?
You got it.
Okay, let's go on.
This guy gets it.
So they try to find the painting. They find it. It turns out Georgina's in cahoots with the terrorist. They track him down to a hotel, and Ewan McGregor burns the painting rather than letting it and its financial secrets fall into the hands of a bad guy, a terrorist who's going to use it to fund his terrorism. Mm-hmm. But then it turns out that painting was a fake. It turns out the Nazi from Last Crusade had the real one in his bathroom the whole time. The Mordecais steal it, and they are going to get it by putting it up for auction to get money to pay off their debts.
I stopped paying attention.
And they're going to hide it as a painting they have, but then actually sell the painting
there's
they have
so many
when they
crosses.
Think they're selling the famous painting to the bad guys. Let's just say this. There's a lot of nonsense at an auction house. Does it make us forget the auction scene in North by Northwest? Certainly not. But it might be right up there with the auction scene in Vincent and Theo, which is very boring because it's just footage of an actual auction.
This movie desperately wants to be a screwball comedy, and it has this like the switchbacks of a screwball comedy, but it does not.
Yeah, because it's such a steep hill.
It does not make us care about any of it. So,
well, I mean, you don't
it
even
just turns into like convoluted.
You don't even necessarily have to care or be able to keep track. I'll say that there are a lot of funny screwball comedies or farces where if you were asked what happened two scenes ago to make this happen, you'd be like, what? I don't know. But while you're following it, it makes some sort of logic.
Why are you asking me this in the middle of a movie?
I'm trying to finish watching Noises Off. Could you please stop bothering me?
Yeah, it doesn't have the crackerjack plotting that a real screwball has.
Yeah, there are no crackerjacks.
It's just complicated.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly not screwballs.
No.
famous screwball comedy
screwballs.
It's not screwballs.
It does not end with a freeze of like a topless lady.
It's not a freeze. You get to see it blowing in the wind. Right?
Let's see it blowing in the wind. It being what?
A woman's bosoms.
Now here depersonalized to an it.
Famed feminist Stuart Wellington.
Use the word bosoms.
It's pretty much just it's glorious.
You didn't call him like
Charlie
rest biscuits
Steinem
or something.
And, Stuart Wellington.
Now so they in the end Mordecai wins and his wife wins. Hooray. They get enough money to pay off their back taxes.
Oh,
everything's
God.
Okay. Mordecai's gonna shave off his mustache, win back his wife, and she says, you know what? Keep it. The fact that you were willing to shave it off for me is enough, and they have a bath together. She tries to kiss him, and she gags, and then Mordecai gags. The end.
And then the audience gags with laughter.
Well,
credits
in some way.
Roll.
So I'm going to say this. Not a good movie. Not that enjoyable, but I kind of liked it.
Yeah, wait. Are we into final judgments already?
You're the boss. I don't know. What else did you want to say
like
about it?
I feel like you kind of are. Well, let's just go to it.
No, but what were you going to say?
I mean,
anything I was going to say, we could say in.
Okay.
I was just happy they didn't play that Smash Mouth song at any point.
Yeah. Oh, I will say the music was too loud and crazy.
Yeah, they were Mickey Mouse-ing that shit all over the place.
Yeah, they were Mickey Mouse-ing it up. So let's do final judgments. Kasplash.
Was this a good bad movie, a bad bad movie, or a movie you kind of liked? Elliot kind of liked it.
I'm on record. I'm ashamed to say
Mordecai,
it, but I have
just
to be
throw that shit on the poster.
Look, as Robert Warshaw said in The Immediate Experience, I must admit that I am a man watching a film having a non-conscious reaction to the film. Kind of liked it.
Here's what I'll say.
Put
about
it on the
movie.
Poster. Kind of liked it. Elliot Kalin, The Flophouse.
Here's what I'll say about the movie. The movie bored me for huge long stretches of it. People can attest.
Yeah, the
people
two people
can attest. The two people in the room.
Who can name them all? Who has the time?
Elliot and Stuart can attest that I spent a fair amount of the movie staring at my phone because I got uninterested in the machinations of the plot. There were too many double crosses and switch 'em ups and switcheroonies.
Googling like
yeah, Andy Rooney's
and beat or something.
Mickey Rooney's and
I didn't like the mechanics of the plot. Bored me, but I kind of enjoyed that there are a bunch of good actors giving their all to some really shitty material.
That's the thing. Nobody in the – it's not great material, but nobody in the movie is sleeping through it and nobody's half-assing it. They are – yeah, they're really
going
through
it. I feel like all
it.
The actors and the director are giving it their all and the script is terrible.
There are a few funny lines in the script, but yeah, mostly it's not very good.
But that's an interesting experience. And like if you have any fondness for terrible comedies of the 60s, which I don't really, but I kind of do because they're – they baffle me so much. Like, I stare at them
and my brain tries to wrap themselves up. Like, my brain rejects
them. While we were watching it, your brain is like, get it, oh, I can't, no.
Like, this is in the form of comedy, but nothing is funny. I don't understand.
While we were watching it, we were talking about the scene in the original Casino Royale where he has to match strengths with the Scottish Klansman, and it's totally boring and long and not funny, but it goes on forever. Or there's the little car race at the end of What's Up, Pussycat? What's New, Pussycat?
Yeah.
And it, where it's like, this is not funny, and it's going on forever.
Forever.
And the movie seems to be wanting to tell me that this is funny.
Even funny comedies from the 60s, even like good Pink Panther movies have long stretches that are just like interminable, like, what is going on? Yeah. Why is this on? Why am I being forced to watch this just for like the 15 minutes of this movie where Peter Sellers is going to be hilarious?
I mean, I like more of those movies than I think you do.
But. No, I do. No, I look. I'm just saying that like Shot in the Dark is the only one that's really solid, and then like the other ones are really up and down.
I like Return of the Pink Panther a lot too.
Yeah, but anyway, what I'm going to say is, from scene to scene, it alternated between bad, bad movie and movie I kind of liked. It would keep going back and forth. So that's what my feeling is. Stuart?
Yeah, I guess I'm with you more with you, Dan, than Elliot. There was there's a couple of jokes I liked, but in general, it was not tight enough for me to give it a movie I kind of like.
Now look, am I ever going to watch this movie again? No.
You're not going to go buy it?
No, I'm not going to run out. I'm not going to
the Blu-ray.
We did watch the R-rated version and not the PG-13 rated cut that you can also. Yeah.
Now, which was all those Mordecai heads out
but
there
that's
who
the thing
are too
is,
young
I think,
to watch Mordecai?
I think yeah. I think like a 13-year-old might enjoy a de-sexed version of this more than an adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is like what? Like, who's Harry Crumb?
Because this was too erotic. In its current
it's a
form.
Who's Harry Crumb?
Who is Harry Crumb?
It's a regular Delirious.
It's a regular Second
Two
Sight.
I liked better than Mordecai.
Second Sight, yeah. It's a regular Dr. Detroit.
That movie is weird. That movie baffles me. How did that movie get made? Like, Dan Aykroyd plays like a robot pimp in Chicago.
He's like a fake pimp.
Yeah. A pimp superhero? I don't understand.
Look, you can't, in a world.
And Howard Hessman is in it?
In a universe where nothing but trouble exists, I can't ask why any other movie was ever made. In a multiverse where someone saw the script for Nothing But Trouble and was like, yeah, I would pay to have this made.
What kind of idiot god would allow this?
As a thoth, dancing to the mad sounds of blind pipers. What tribulation did he seek to visit upon humanity?
Yeah,
that
so,
he greenlit Nothing But Trouble.
Yeah. So we all agree, Mordecai was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, A++++.
Hello, I'm Taku, the elephant magician.
Merle Highchurch here, the master of clerical magic.
I'm Magnus Burnsides, the fighter.
Did you guys like that? Did you, the listener, like that? You were just swept up in a world of high fantasy and magic where anything can happen and anything is possible. Hi, I'm Griffin McElroy, Dungeon Master for The Adventure Zone, a new podcast on Maximum Fun, in which magic and mystery intertwine for a very erotically charged role-playing experience. You can catch it every other Thursday here on MaximumFun.org or iTunes. It's Dungeons & Dragons, but with family.
Moving on to letters from listeners.
Yeah, why not?
That's the traditional next segment in the show.
Yeah, yeah. As legend tells. Passed down generation for generation.
Of letters. And the first letter.
There is a prophecy.
Oh,
a
I
prophecy
like
of missives from the outside. What the elders call the wasted land. Too poisonous from after the nuke war for regular travelers to voyage across. Mm-hmm. And yet, strange communications from intelligences unknown are received by the last surviving members of humanity known as the House of the Flopping Inn. The House of the Flopping Inn, where the three now elderly survivors and caretakers of the memory of humanity sit in ancient silence, too frightened to speak for fear of being interrupted by one of the other two.
This isn't even a song.
And lo, the prophecy foretells that a message shall be received, a youth shall be discovered, and a new world aborn. In the after times, after the cataclysm of the nuke war, there came a people, the flock people, a mighty tribe, a massive tribe, a wise tribe. The flop people spreading the gospel of flop across the wasteland to mutants and ghosts and zombies and skeletons and aliens and robots and gator men and ant people and bear dogs.
Compass?
All right.
Just a few more letters. Yeah. I've been writing on sheets of white. Just trying to get
weird prog
it
rock
right.
Introduction to
that actual rose.
That's actual rose.
Actual rose, not a simulation. That's like something like your grandma is like, Stuart, I got you that actual rose album you wanted, and it's just a photo album of pictures of roses. Well, grandma, it's supposed to be Axl Rose with Guns N' Roses. Oh, a gun at your age? I don't think so.
So this first letter, this is clearly in response to something that we said in a previous episode.
Who can remember?
That I can't remember.
Every episode.
Lost through the sands of time.
The minute Dan says recording over, I click, drag my memories to the recycle bin, and delete.
Yes, I don't know what specifically this was in reference to, but it was interesting enough on its own that I was going to read it. It goes like this. Gents, although Godzilla has never fought either Frankenstein or Frankenstein's monster.
Well. Let's just say right here, in Frankenstein Conquers the World, Frankenstein's monster fights Baragon.
Well, hold on. We're getting there.
Okay.
He got closer than you expect.
Okay, there you go. Thanks, letter writer.
During 1960, Miriam C. Cooper actually tried to sell Toho on a movie where King Kong would fight a Frankenstein-style monster. This somehow metamorphosized into King Kong fighting Godzilla in Godzilla versus King Kong, which in Japan was actually mostly a weird working-class comedy with monsters in it. Then Toho
I like
made
that idea.
Frankenstein Conquers the World,
okay,
where Nazi scientists attempt to take the heart of Frankenstein's monster to Japan. Unfortunately for Japan, they take the heart to Hiroshima, where it is irradiated when the Allies bomb the city. This obviously results in the heart regenerating into a giant dude who then fights a monster called Baragon.
Okay, thank you.
Baragon would go on to fight alongside Godzilla against King Ghidorah and destroy all monsters.
Yeah.
Also, Frankenstein's monster sort of ended up splitting into two giant hairy twins who fought one another.
In War of the Gargantuas.
Although that is not terribly relevant here. So by the transitive property, Godzilla has not only fought Frankenstein's monster, he's done it twice. Also, Toho has made some absurd movies. Yours and Flop, Lawrence Last Name Withheld.
I've seen all those movies, and I love them all. When I was a kid, I watched the Godzilla movies almost in order over and over again.
Yeah?
Yeah, I loved them. I'd even sit through the boring talkie scenes because I knew guys in monster suits were going to be punching each other on tiny city sets.
Mm-hmm. I'd always get up during the talkie scenes and leave.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good way to
or
do it, too.
Like build a fort out of Legos. Mm-hmm. A fort for my Lego, man, not for me.
What
That'd
you
be crazy.
Those twins were on.
The Mothra twins?
The Mothra twins?
Just hanging out, saying things.
That falls under the boring category.
Singing a beautiful song that went, Masoraya, Masoraya. I don't know the actual words. It's just my transliteration.
That's a lullaby you use for your baby, right?
I totally should. I didn't even think about that. Well, that's the song they sing to get Mothra to calm him down and everything.
Yeah.
So here's what I'm going to say about that. Also, I just finished watching the other day the new version of Godzilla, mm-hmm. which I missed when it was in the theaters. Didn't
you
care
said
for it.
Nude version yeah. of Godzilla?
Well, all versions of Godzilla are nude. He never wears clothes. I didn't like that new Godzilla movie, and I was really looking forward to it. Yeah.
I liked it okay.
I found the human plot line uninteresting. And,
yeah, that's fair.
And I found the new monster uninspiring.
All right.
Okay, hot takes
also,
from Elliot Kalin.
Is it just me, or did Godzilla get kind of fat? Mm-hmm. That was a chunky Godzilla.
He got chubs over
The
here.
Internet went crazy about that. They were making fun of how fat he was.
He was kind of fat.
I kind of like that, though.
No, I like, yeah, it made him more vulnerable.
He was fat mm-hmm. like my cat.
Well, that was the thing. Mm-hmm. I found it.
Adorably fat, exactly.
It was braver of Godzilla to be nude in those scenes because he's so out of shape.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to.
There was an About Schmidt, Kathy Bates honesty about the scenes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get you. This next letter.
So why did that person write in?
I don't know. I'm saying I must have been in reference to something that we said in a previous episode, but I don't remember. And I don't care to remember.
I want to see a series of of shorts you do called I Don't Remember, where it's, you're sitting in a chair and goes, ah, yes, January 6th, 2007, I don't remember. That's the whole thing.
It's like an NPR series.
Dan McCoy in I Don't Remember.
It's like the opposite of StoryCorps. I don't know what happened on April 5th, 1992, and I don't care.
Something could have happened. I don't know.
I prefer the Crypt Keepers NPR show, Gory Gore. Also, Tory Gore.
Or Story Gore. Yeah exactly. Yeah. Not Tory Gore. That's too political for me. Yeah. Tory Gore is also, I guess, the Tales from the Crypt nickname for Terry Gar.
That would be Terror Gore. When the Crypt Keeper on his local news channel is what, reviewing Young Frankenstein? Yeah.
Or Manos' Torgo Gore. This one goes like this. Hello, Peaches. Dan and Elliot can take a breather on this one because This email is directed toward Stuart.
Ba-boom. Is this from my mom?
Stuart, at your wedding, did your wife write her own vows and include a parody of Casey and JoJo's All My Life featuring the lyric, "All my life, I've prayed for someone like Stu"? Do you think that if you had been marrying Weird Al Yankovic, that he would have done that?
Probably.
Do you wish you had married Weird Al Yankovic? I'll hang up and listen. Chris, last name withheld.
Well, the advantage of being married to Weird Al Yankovic would be, of course, financial security.
He's very successful.
And the security of knowing that he has a fortune of parody jokes.
And you can run your hands through those long
run
ringlets.
My hair through his hair.
Yeah. I wish that we could
intermingle tie it together.
And then just whip each other around the room.
Exactly. Like some kind of a martial arts duo in a Shaw Brothers film. Yeah.
I wish it had said, "Do you wish you married Weird Al Yankovic?" Signed, Weird Al, last name withheld.
I can say, as someone who's known Stuart for years, that he has sung plenty of songs that have the word "you" in them and replaced "stew" in the lyrics.
Die Without Stew.
Yeah.
There's probably others.
I've been waiting for a girl like Stew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stew. Stew got what I need. Like that one. Yeah.
We can go stuff on for a while. Yeah. Elliot, there's
Stu
not a lot of Elliot's.
Make me feel... No, Elliot fits into almost no songs.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Dan fits into a lot. It's a raining Dan. Hallelujah, it's raining Dan.
However, there's very few songs that actually have my name in it. The only one I can think of is... Daniel is leaving tonight on the plane.
I don't think I know that song. Who's that by?
Elton John.
Oh.
Danny Boy.
Oh, there you go. That's a classic.
I'm a soul Dan.
Okay.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
So, what's the answer to that?
The answer is
yes, maybe, probably.
Thanks, Stu. So, last letter of the evening. Last letter.
Final letter.
Is titled, Think of the Ratings.
Okay. Podcast ratings?
Peaches, babies, I've been following your work for some time, and I've got to tell you, I like what I hear. But we all know that after 170-some episodes, the shtick has become a little played out.
You're mm-hmm. telling us.
That's right. The bits, Stuart. Sure. You've intended...
This guy's coming on real strong.
Whoa. Full court press is what David Kalin would call it.
Sure. You've attempted to mix it up with tried and tested tropes. The time Stuart tried to get out of jury duty, for example, by ripping his own ding-dong off.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work.
Or my hand got ripped off instead.
Or when Dan mournfully sighed the precise frequently to shatter the encasing of the world-famous 7-pound jewel, aiding and abetting a known supervillain. And let's not forget the short-lived spin-off series, Flophouse Babies, in which Elliot rigs the school spelling bee to include his personal vocabulary of words that sound like other words. Mr. Kalin used the word goatables in a sentence. Enter the house cat.
Well, wait a minute. The babies go to school?
That's what I was wondering. Babies are not good at spelling bees.
It's pre-K. Enter the house cat.
Still, again, this is can't spell.
While pre-Kalin. Fast becoming the most popular character, the Flophouse house cat brought little more to the meow mix than the internet's most annoying catchphrase, rah-rah, inspiring a new generation of Bart Simpson knockoff t-shirts.
The You've most irritating internet catchphrase has got to be, we could be like this, but you, was it?
You tripping,
yeah. That's what I was saying. I couldn't even remember. It was so irritating.
You've made some bold choices over the years as the world has watched on anxiously, praying for that rekindling spark. but there's one thing your stories have missed, a love interest. Gentlemen, that's where I come in. What I'm proposing is just that, a Flophouse proposal, the primetime special lifetime event extravaganza episode we've been waiting for. In fact, as a show of good faith in our prospective arrangement, I'd like to make an offering of personal humility. Allow me to address the woman who has long studied your work by my side, an honorary flopster who has chimed in with every episode's conversation, regardless of whether you've addressed her. She's your greatest champion and my associate in love, and our history together is as storied as this program. Tracy, the love and happiness we've shared so far is something I thought only existed in bad movies. Yet 6 years in, I'm amazed you will still suffer me so gracefully. We've shared an adventure and misadventure and some of my favorite moments of the mundanity in between, but I yearn for a life greater than these Flophouse reruns. Every day I get to wake up with you feels like the start of something new, with limitless possibilities ahead. It's time to focus 100% of our brains on the future. It's time to begin a new venture. So I ask you this, Tracy, not as the resident Dan McCoy, but as humble letter writer Cohen. Tracy, last name withheld, will you marry me, please? Well, that's all I have for now. Regardless of your decision, baby, I think our work here is done. I got a feeling these peaches will be just fine. Let's focus our attention now on the next potential spinoff, The Last Name Withhelds. I have some thoughts you might like to hear, but it depend on the star power of one Flophouse house cat. See you at home, baby. Don't delay. Keep on flopping. Cohen, last name withheld. So if there's a Tracy out there who's dating a Cohen, last name withheld, and I hope there's not more than one. Because otherwise, we fucked you.
whoa, did you just, wait, are you telling the guy, you just helped him with a proposal, and then you're just telling him that you...
No, I'm saying the other person, the other one who did not.
I do like the idea of...
The guy wasn't ready for a commitment that.
There you go.
He did bring up the idea of mundanity, which I think is a good a sitcom starring Dan McCoy and Olivia Munn.
Shut the fuck up.
Wait, I'm saying you were starring in a sitcom, dude. I think you'd be great.
Olivia Munn.
Can we not bicker among ourselves for one moment
and
let the romance settle that's just happened? Yeah. That our fan Cohen
English professors
has just chosen possibly the weakest vessel or instrument, Dan, to propose to his girlfriend Tracy. Dan, this is the first fan-to-fan via the podcast proposal.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Very exciting. And that means that if they get married and have a baby, they have to name that baby either Flophouse, House Cat, or Studaniot.
So if you want Tracy to say yes, write in A to Radio Zork.
If you want her to say no, write in B. And also, you're heartless. And if you want her to say, give me a moment, with kind of like a twinkle in her eye, and then say yes, write in C.
And if you'd like to push the door open slightly, slightly more. Okay, stop. Right in D.
We'll get this door open someday.
this door needs some oil.
Well, perhaps next week we can give an option that people can try oil on it. So, Tracy, I think Cohen has shown his total lack of judgment in using Dan as his instrument, but I think you should overlook that.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I'm sure he's romantic in plenty of other ways. So I think
you said that's so gross.
I don't know why we threw him under the bus so quickly.
Because he chose to propose via us.
And we are touched and
via
we are
these bros.
We are totally touched.
Via these bros.
We're hiding how much we're touched by, all
that's
these
true.
Jokes.
Classic flop bro behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're deflecting.
You know, we
can't let the real emotions.
Let's have
in.
A moment of real sincerity.
Let's get real.
You know what?
Everybody turn your baseball caps backwards.
Let's turn your chairs around. Let's rap about this. You two.
Is
hope
great
everything
band.
Works out.
Yeah. You seem like a great couple. I don't know much about either of you, but one of you can write in to the podcast.
One of you writes a funny letter. I know both of you are fans.
He didn't pick that many big words in that letter.
Yeah.
That's forethought.
Yeah, because he knows Dan's stupid tongue will just trip on him.
The other one is a lady, and he seems to love you. So you got that going for
Dan,
you.
Dan, did you propose to your wife?
Yeah. I can't remember. It's a long time ago.
I mean, my words were not too well either.
Yeah.
Look.
My words were not too well either. Classic Elliot.
Yeah. Classic not speaking right.
So letters, right?
So letters. I think we're all overwhelmed by the emotion of that. Yeah. And I guess we're all invited to the wedding now?
Sure, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Or we could crash it.
What kind of open while bar we're
while
we
we're riding
here?
High on while we're riding high on these letters, I want to give a quick shout out to the 3-year anniversary of Chris and Steph. Listeners, Chris and Steph, they were in the bar the other day and told me their 3-year anniversary was coming.
Oh, that's very nice. So I guess we've now instituted the precedent that the Flophouse cares about your marriages.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with this.
No, no, no.
I prefer to be a cold, distant
You would
god.
Rather that... You would
did you say God?
I did.
I think you are overestimating your place
in the cosmos.
You would
rather split up marriages so people then marry someone else and spread
but
the
Dan,
Flophouse love to other people.
But Dan, without marriages, our source of wives, where will wives' butts come from?
Okay, this true. Is a misnomer. I like all butts. I don't really care what the
you don't
marital
prefer
status
them to be on
is.
Wives?
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, I prefer them... Look... Just because I'm straight, not because I have any anything against...
This got Whoa, weird. Dude. This got weird
prefer,
for no reason.
I mean, I personally prefer them to be on wives than on husbands as a matter of personal sexual preference.
But you'll take what you can get.
But I'll take unmarried women as well, is all I'm saying.
And dudes?
Sometimes dudes.
Depends on the dude.
I mean, if they're really sexy butts, yeah, why not?
Danny Glover, yes. John Voight, no.
No. How did Danny Glover get on there?
He's got a great
Is he
butt.
Famous for his butt?
Yeah. Lethal Weapon
Check
3,
out that
dude.
Badonk,
What do you
man?
Think that Lethal Weapon was referring to?
I'm just saying...
Did mm-hmm. say? They call him Bedonkled Glover.
I'm just saying that the toilet in Lethal Weapon 2 could have exploded and he would have been fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
It would have absorbed into his butt.
It's like he's got two airbags back there.
I really hope that as soon as the letter was
Not
finished being
one,
read...
Not just one, like a normal person.
That the husband-to-be turned off the podcast.
Yeah, we can only hope.
And that they haven't just been like hugging and kissing and talking to each other and then suddenly they hear something about Danny Glover's butt.
I like to think they are making love to what we're saying right now.
I don't like that at all.
Right now.
I don't like that.
Right now.
He like zapped her clothes off and then they're...
Yeah, okay. Like on a kitchen floor or something like that?
Sure, why not?
It happens in the movie sometimes.
All the time, yeah.
That's what I hear.
Like on a staircase in History of Violence, and it looks really uncomfortable.
Yeah, man. There's 69ing? That happened in History of Violence.
I don't think so.
I think it did. Let's check the tape.
Don't anybody write in on that one.
No, not interested.
Okay, so what do we do next?
What's the next part?
Do we watch Mordecai again?
Yeah. It's a Groundhog Day situation.
Somebody let me out of this.
This is the part of the podcast where we recommend movies that we actually liked, in contrast to Mordecai, which some of us kind of liked, but there are still better movies
Not
to
really
watch.
Enough to recommend it. I would never recommend it to anybody.
Let me jump in here.
Yeah, do it.
Time to recommend a movie.
I think we might recommend the same movie this week, Stuart, but you go first.
So this is a movie, I'm going to take the wheel on this one.
Thematic.
Rev my engines and recommend a movie that the internet has already kind of championed, but it, in some ways it might not have gotten the financial backing that it deserves, nay, has earned by quality. I am going to recommend a little movie called Castle Freak.
What? Whoa.
directed by Stuart Gordon.
You know what, Stuart? When I said same movie, I was wrong.
I just want to say that Castle Freak, after its
Classic
Blu-ray release, has gotten much more attention. And also possibly the street level support from yours truly. Castle Freak has started to get a little more attention, but... I recommend that you guys either go buy the Blu-ray or write your congressman to maybe make Full Moon streaming available to everybody.
Why do we have to write
to proclaim it National Castle Freak Day? I like that. I think it's on the Wikipedia entry for Castle Freak that says, see also Head of the Family, Invisible Maniac, movies that are not related to it at all except through Stewart.
Quality sometimes. They're related because they're both Oscar winners, I'm assuming.
No. Stuart, what movie are you really recommending?
I was going to recommend Castle Freak.
Okay.
What are you going to recommend?
I was going to recommend, as I thought you were going to with your car racing metaphors, a little movie called Mad Max Fury Road.
Now, what is this Max so angry about?
I'll tell you what. It's more mad. Well, he started out mad angry in the first Mad Max because his family had been killed by bikers. But this is three movies later. We're on the fourth film. It's long past the nuclear apocalypse. Now he's more mad insane.
46 years, in fact.
And he is, let's just say one thing. If you're a Flophouse listener, you probably saw this movie already. I really loved it. It was everything I wanted from that
movie.
You
should have already seen, if you haven't seen this movie, you're crazy. Turn off this stupid podcast and go watch
the
movie.
What the fuck are you doing?
Tracy, stop saying yes to the marriage proposal. Go see Mad Max Fury Road. Mad Max Fury Road is nonstop Mad Max action for the most
part. Watch Mad Max Fury Road.
No, that's
it's a different thing.
I mean, you can watch that only after you've watched the original.
We're in an even more extreme, grotesque, and delightful nuclear wasteland than in the previous Mad Max movies.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Hardy, I find to be a more than fitting replacement for Mel Gibson, especially as the character has become simplified and kind of
less important to his own story.
Well, he's gone crazy to the point that he's now just this kind of being running on instinct for the most part and communicating very briefly, if at all.
With the strangest accent in the world.
Yes, with an accent that's not quite English or Australian or American. It's somewhere in between. Charlize Theron is great as Imperator Furiosa.
Yep.
And there's so many great crazy character designs. There's so much grotesque stuff. The action scenes are amazing. It's almost nonstop thrills, chills, and spills.
The art book is really great, too.
The designs are fantastic, and many of them, as well as the script being co-written by, done by comic artist Brendan McCarthy, who actually illustrated my first ever Marvel story.
Oh, wow.
My Captain America story from years ago. So I felt a little bit of pride there. But,
well, no, the script was originally written all
storyboards, right? But it's just a really fun, intense action movie. When I saw it, literally I sat down through the entire credits and didn't get up because I was so kind of like vibrating from having just seen this that I felt like I couldn't stand up right away. But I would fall over.
It creates an altered state in you that is not unlike taking drugs.
Like, kind of.
We took a cab ride back from the screening afterwards, and we were both sort of, in this like phase where we're just like, we are so hyped up and we do not know what to do with this energy.
Yeah, it's like this movie is like just amphetamines being shot into your system. Yeah. But there's the moment, and this,
you know, from all your experience of amphetamine use.
Yeah, yeah. The from my experience reading Hunter S. Thompson's
writings.
He's an
amphetamaniac.
Yeah, I saw it twice within a 12-hour time period. And
I'm amazed
I do not
you
regret
survived.
That.
Yeah.
It was the perfect choice.
I kind of want to see it under altered states a little bit. I think that might be.
I don't know. It's so much fun without it. I don't know why you need it. Here's the moment where I went from liking the movie a lot to loving the movie, or rather when I went from loving it to worshiping it, which is when Max and Charlize Theron are on the run from all the bad guys who are in their giant truck war rigs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a truck that's just got rows of drummers on the back of it just beating war drums, and the camera is moving around this group of trucks, and it gets to the front of that drum truck, and there's just a guy in red long underwear with his head wrapped up so he can't see, strapped to a wall of amps, just shredding away on an electric guitar on the top of a truck as everything zooms down the highway across a nuclear desert. And I was like, yep, this is exactly the movie I've been dreaming about all this time.
You did it, Hollywood. You cracked the code.
So Hollywood didn't do it. It's all George Miller.
Well, that's
and the people who he worked with.
That's what I want to say about this movie is like I read so many – like I feel like – we all three would be recommending this movie if we
didn't, three kings of flop.
If we didn't know that,
I was recommending Castle Freak.
If we weren't aware that like all of us were going to be recommending this movie, like we all would recommend this movie.
Yeah, I didn't see any other movies.
If a movie tops this movie for my favorite movie of the year, this will be the best year of movies of my life.
Yeah, it would be it would be a gift of the move guy situation. Like we would all be recommending.
Wait.
I bought you combs for your movies, but you've already destroyed the movies, so your combs are wasted.
I bought you a new Blu-ray player, but you sold all your Blu-rays to buy me
a movie fob. So you don't lose your movies when you're from your pocket.
To buy me a binder for the discs.
No, but what I was going to say about this movie is like I read a bunch of reviews of this movie that were all like, you know, praising it as an action film and praising, you know, how it's a triumph of practical special effects and it's a triumph of old school action filmmaking where you actually like have a sense of the geography of things. You know, all of these things that are true about the movie. But what none of these reviews really said, which baffles me because it is so front and center, is how bonkers craze balls this movie is.
Plenty of the reviews I think mentioned that. But
like they didn't like really get into like how ridiculous like this movie is.
It's
like
crazy.
It is an Australian exploitation movie like made with $200 million. Like in terms of like the, like everyone is just like shouting at each other in like weird Australian accents. They're just like, pointing at each other.
Like,
and like it's all like fast motion weird. Like they've like undercranked the camera.
Except for Tom Hardy and these four young women that he's trying to save in it. Every character is grotesquely deformed or maimed or just hideously ugly in some way. Yeah. And the old ladies that come in later, they're not ugly, but.
The Volvolini?
Yeah, but there's...
George Miller has not changed, though, is the thing.
No,
like,
he's just
since
got
since he made the
more,
Road Warrior, he's got more so.
More resources to do a bigger... Like, there were parts of this where I'm like, this is basically Road Warrior again, but, like, bigger and crazier.
More stagecoachy.
Yeah, and there's other differences, but, like, yeah, it's... But, yeah, in that they're getting chased one way and they get chased another way. But, that like, it's so... crazy, yeah, and I feel like a lot of the reviews have been trying to dignify this movie, or at least treat it with dignity.
Cartoon of a movie,
but it is a movie that is dignified and deserves dignity. Yeah. But they seem to be missing out the fun. You have the fact that it is crazed balls insaneo,
and it feels like the closest thing you'll ever get to like a filmed 2000 AD strip. Like not just because Brandon McCarthy was involved and like the look of the film, just like the structure is very much like a comic book.
Yeah, if someone like did like an underground cartoon and was like, we're gonna film this in all of the weirdness of it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and just the fact – if you stay through the credits and just look at the characters' names, all these characters who are not mentioned by name in the movie and have the most amazing names.
Like did you see Matt Singer, film critic Matt Singer's article where he made a list of – he mixed up a list of Mad Max characters and just crazy bullshit names he made up?
No.
And it was a quiz to see if you could pick out which ones were right.
Well, that one of the characters is named Rictus Erectus.
Yeah.
And then there's that the doctor character is referred to as the Organic Mechanic. Like, they have great rhyming names, a lot of it. I can't remember most of the really good names, but they're really great. Worth sitting through the credits.
So I'm going to recommend a movie that, like...
Mad Max Fury Road.
Is No, like...
It's high-octane thrill ride.
Let's be clear.
Take your favorite blood bag.
Let's be clear. If I was not totally sure that one of my co-hosts was not going to recommend Mad Max Fury Road, I would recommend Mad Max Fury Road. But thematically...
Are you trying to say you don't like Mad Max Fury Road? No,
the opposite. But thematically... I'm going to recommend something that kind of plays into the whole Mad Max Fury Road thing.
Called Road Warrior.
Which is, I watched a movie that I will not make any arguments for as great cinema. I'll make an argument for it as something that hovers perfectly in that zone between good, bad movie and movie I kind of like. Which was, I watched Need for Speed, which is another car racing movie, another chase movie.
Is that the one with the kid from Breaking Bad?
Yeah, the guy plays Jesse in
Breaking Vlad.
Blah, blah.
Breaking Vlad. Blah, I need to sell meth to support my family. I have cancer. No, you're undead. You'll never die. You're immortal. All right. He turns out I'm just a bad guy.
He remembers that?
Blah. Walter White.
That's good. I like it.
Yeah, no, Aaron Paul.
Breaking Vlad.
Who played Jesse in Breaking Bad. You got Dominic Cooper, who was
the
elder Stark, Tony Stark's father.
Oh, no, who am I thinking of? Who's in The Wire? Dominic
Cooper. The guy who's going to be Preacher?
Yeah, I don't know. You got Imogene Poots.
And he was in...
Imogene Poots?
We got two flop people there.
Yeah.
Dominic, what's his name, was in Dracula. And Imogene Poots was in what? That awkward moment?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, she's going to be in the new... She's going to be in the green room.
Well, you got three flop people because Dakota Johnson is also in it.
Wow. Dan, this is a flop trove.
But also Michael Keaton is in it playing basically imagine the Warriors radio DJ character.
Okay.
A character who's narrating the events of the movie but also is in charge of the big final race.
Can I imagine he's the Vanishing Point radio character?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Whatever you're imagining, imagine that Michael Keaton came in for one day of filming. He's like, I'll do it all in one room, talking into a computer. Can I do that? And they're like, sure, whatever, Michael Keaton. We're glad to have you. But this is a movie that takes about 20 minutes to set itself up, which is 20 minutes too long. But once it gets into, like, and all that 20 minutes is to establish that Aaron Paul needs to win this race. One, to save his family's garage.
Okay.
Two.
Why didn't he just do a bikini car wash?
Two, because the guy that stole his girlfriend is a dick. And three, because the guy, the dick who stole his girlfriend, framed him for the manslaughter killing of his best friend. And so he has to clear his name, I guess, by winning a race. Mm-hmm. And so he has to get from New York to California in 48 hours, and then he has to enter this race and win it. And it has a lot of good, like, practical special effects because it was, like John Wick, it was directed by a stunt person. So
they prefer to be called stunted Americans.
So there's a little more care put into the effects and the, like, geography of the effects than
so
you usually
what
see
kind,
in an
if this
movie.
Was a bear, what kind of bear would it be?
Yeah,
I don't.
Kodiak?
Like a Care Bear?
Whoa.
What? I don't.
Because he said care was put into it.
Oh. Okay.
What a,
maybe, keep up, guys.
Was
keep
it
up,
a,
guys.
Was it a black bear?
No.
Grizzly?
It was.
Was it a panda bear?
No. Polar bear?
I don't know what this bear tangent.
Answer the question, Dan. Was it a polar bear?
Yeah, it was a polar bear.
Polar bear directed a movie that's you buried the lead. Was it one of those Coca-Cola polar bears? They seem smart.
Point is, it's a dumb movie, but it's a dumb movie that I had a lot of fun watching. So if you if you're coming home from Mad Max Fury Road,
two for two, Lucy and Need for Speed,
and you want to see a movie that's much worse than Mad Max Fury Road, but also has cars racing around going,
yeah, because Mad Max Fury Road's not going to fill your need for cars racing around.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying, like, if you want some methadone from it,
oh, you want to come down. I see.
Yeah, you could do worse from Need for Speed. I think
unfairly could do worse, says Dan McCoy. Dan McCoy.
Watch The Hitcher instead.
It was a movie that got a lot of bad reviews. I think it's a lot more fun than the reviews would suggest, is all I'm saying.
Okay, Need for Speed. Give it a try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, no, that's the number one.
And Castle Freak. We covered it.
Castle Freak.
Three for three, guys.
And I just want to say one thing. It is an Mad Max Fury Road is a big budget exploitation movie, but it's great.
Yeah,
it's a great movie.
I was just trying to capture the zaniness
of
it.
No, but I agree, yeah.
Which I feel like a lot of the reviews in the, yeah, as you say, like, in their, like, need to, like, dignify it, like, did not sort of paper over the fact that it is a Looney Tunes movie.
And a lot of, and not, not of course, not a real Looney Tunes movie with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. They haven't made a movie since Looney Tunes Back in Action.
Is that what about the one where they're on the island?
Donald Daffy Duck's Fantasy Island. Fantastic Island, yeah. That was one of, well,
like
that's
that
more
one.
Of a repack thing where they had some original animation
cartoons.
Between old cartoons, like Daffy Duck's Quackbusters was the same thing.
Yeah.
And 1001 Arabian Bunny Tales, whatever it was called.
That sounds like a porno.
Like a bunny.
Yes, that was the subtext of my joke.
But there's a lot of, not to keep talking about Fury Road, but like it does feel like a lot of reviewers from prestigious publications saw it and liked it and were like, I can't like this just because it's a crazy bonkers thrill ride. I'm going to come up with some reason why I like it.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's three recommendations for Fury Road.
and one for Castle Freak.
Yeah, and
sleep, don't run to see Need for Speed,
yeah,
says Dan McCoy.
It's all right,
yeah,
Dan McCoy.
It's all right.
Hey, that's all right, boss. Raves Dan McCoy in offensive Italian accent.
Wow. I'm sorry that I'm coughing right when I need to go into the next thing, which is to say, we're just one part of the Max Fun podcast, which I was reminded of when I was out. Max Fun Podcast Network, sorry, which I. Was
you
reminded
were in Los
of
Angeles.
Yet again when I was in
LA, La La Land,
Babe City,
and I had some drinks with Jordan Morris of Jordan Jesse Go,
name dropping,
and Travis McElroy of My Brother and My Brother and Me. Two of I would dare
what
say
kind of
my
drinks did you have?
Two other favorite podcasts on the Max Fun Network.
Mm, wow, picking favorites, yeah. Making enemies.
Sure, why not? I don't care.
burning bridges.
Come at me, bros.
I had some old fashions.
Okay.
But I met Jordan before. It's my first time meeting Travis.
Meeting a McElroy?
The middlest brother of
the
McElroy
band.
Brothers.
Yeah, you tell him I want to be on their D&D podcast?
I did tell him that.
Okay, good.
And Travis and I bonded over the fact that we both agreed that we were, like, people have tried to map the three of us, you, Stuart, Elliot, and me, onto other characters in pop culture.
Yeah, I feel like I'm more of a Huey, you're more of a Dewey, and Stuart's a real Louie.
Exactly. Yeah. And we were mapping us onto the McElroys, and Travis and I agreed that we were the same
You didn't touch each other, right?
Yeah, they put hands down and said, "You're not so different, you and I."
Yeah, and then we like, exploded.
Yeah, we touched each other and melt into each other and explode cops. Like in Time Cop.
But he was a delightful person in person, as you would imagine him to be. His wife was equally delightful. And mm-hmm. so you should listen to his podcast, My Brother and Me. He also has other podcasts, Bunker Buddies being one of them, The Adventure Zone.
Adventure Zone.
All good stuff.
My Brother and Me.
Yeah. I'm just saying, check out
Bunker Adventure Buddies. Zone.
Yeah.
A lot of great Max Fun podcasts, even ones that don't have McElroys in them.
Yeah.
Like Jordan Jesse Go.
Jordan Jesse Go. Things That I Can't Remember Right Now.
Things That I Can't Remember Right Now. Is that a podcast? Starring Dan McCoy.
I don't remember.
Why don't
Dan
you
McCoy.
Fucking help out by promoting our benevolent podcast overlords?
Yeah, Max Fun. We got tons of great shows. Throwing Shade.
Yeah, there you go. That's one.
Elliot.
Judge John Hodgman.
Perfect.
Sure, Bullseye.
Knocked it off.
Another Wait, one. Are we just doing rounds?
Yeah. Let's see how long we can keep us going.
Too much pressure now.
Yeah, there you go.
I can't. Look, Dan, there's too many people watching me.
The Flophouse, okay?
Yeah, we did it. Brought it around.
Point is, go to MaximumFun.org. Check out other shows on the network. I think that you'll
find
merch. That
they're
all
delightful.
Buy
some merch from our show and other shows.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sensibility that runs through the Maximum Fun podcast.
A sense and sensibility in that we're all based on the works of Jane Austen.
Yeah. I think you'll enjoy it.
Flophouse is a loose adaptation of Northanger Abbey.
Very loose.
Mm-hmm, very loose, if you know what I mean.
Anyway, the point was just thank you for Jordan and Travis for being hospitable when I was in their city. And check out Max Fun Podcast.
Is this like a weird way of inviting other Max Fun people to New
sure,
York
man.
So we can buy them drinks?
Yeah.
Why not?
My bar will probably be open soon. And I can just
let's all hang out.
Yeah, let's have a regular Max teats. Fun hangout. It's this like is a weird way to invite other Max Fun hosts to hang out
we'll
with.
We'll have an Algonquin roundtable
yeah,
at your
do it in front of other
bar.
People.
Algonquin pod table. Is Jordan Jesse Go named after what I assume their shared father said when he threw them out of the house? Jordan Jesse Go!
Yeah,
I have no hosts.
Yeah.
So Dan, who are we, and what are we from, and what are we doing now? Going.
This is the Flophouse Podcast. We're from the Max Fun Network. We're podcasters primarily.
From Brooklyn, New York.
We're from New
York. I'm trying to set you up to end the podcast.
What we do now?
Forget about it.
Is we say goodbye to all of you.
So what are we doing?
For the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
And I have been Stuart Wellington.
And yours in Mad Max Fury Road, I am Elliot Kalin.
Good night, everyone.
Mordecai! Like, I love Premium Rush.
Premium Rush, great.
Oh!
Is that a caveman's review? Premium Rush, great.
I know what J.R. Haviland has to say.
Yeah.
Take that, J.R. Haviland.
Premium Rush, great. So says Og on Caveman Review.
Michael Shannon performance nuance.
Thog and Grok in the aisle. Og and Thunk go to the movies. I give this one.
What?
Thumb type finger up.
Sure. So they know the word thumb, but they don't have one yet.
They're not smart enough to know. Well, they don't have opposable thumbs. They're hominids.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
Homonyms.
No, they're not homonyms. They're hymnyms, like in Gulliver's Travels.
Hum-meow-nyms.
Oh, that's a cat.
That's when a cat that's sounds like another stuff. Cat.
Yeah.
All right, let's do an introduction first.
My name's Stuart.
No.
I've been on the podcast for like a million years, and I never want to stop doing it. I love cats. What about you?
If you're interested in meeting up, just write to me at stuart@meow.com/edu.
Let's get a little weird. Who cares?
Hey everybody, I'm Emily.
And I'm Lisa.
We co-host Baby Geniuses every other Monday on Maximum Fun.
We interview comedians, musicians, cartoonists, circus clowns, and experts in the field of
vacations, the afterlife, cool recipes, self-improvement, fashion, candy, beach boys, girls, turtles, plot twists, women dating, fitness, presidents, hair removal, conflict resolution, Santa meditation, babies, modern dinosaurs, bullying, crop circles, the Beatles, middle-aged men, experts, teens, life hacking, rhyming, baby talk, personal organization, the name Dexter, Frasier, extreme eating, groceries, being a best friend, movement, jam, art education, America's funniest home videos, stockbroking, spooky stories, genealogy, riddles, Pinterest, IT, magic, revenge, mothering, dogs, ayahuasca, Hollywood legends, street racing, fitting in, celebrity dirty sex, the occult, personal training, the ocean, Dennis the Menace, modern poetry, sugar gliders, Jimmy Buffett, Franks, the Tonight Show with Gun, Johnny Carson, Mountain Dew, theme park safety, dinner parties, butterflies, raccoons, pasta chase, and Bob Dylan. Join us every other Monday.
Yay.